Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I'd say we'll play basketball here tomorrow night, but we will talk a little bit about Alabama football today with Eli Gold, the play-by-play voice of Alabama football, who will join us on the show later today. I think what in the 4:06 half hour. John McClain, Houston Chronicle, is going to join us at 4:35. The Eagles in Texas this week. The legendary John McClain will join us from the Houston Chronicle at 4:35 coming up today. And also on the show, a little bit on recruiting, which we will do. And that will be on the show today. I believe it's Tom Van Herren is joining us from ESPN.com. So we've got a lot today. And then Jason Kendall, the former Pirates catcher, is going to be on our show tomorrow. How about that? Along with the King. I don't know if he knows he's sharing time with the King.
They'll have to deal with it. Is what it is.
Speaking of having to deal with it, how is the suit doing?
Doing good today. Doing great today.
Why, Jamie's not in?
Oh, she's here too.
Got my feet up. The boss isn't around. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, the countdown to tomorrow is underway.
Oh, believe me, that countdown began October 21st. All right, so for certain people. All right. Last night's game.
Yeah, how about that? A six-pack of free throws for the win. I was going to ask you what specific angle you got. It's weird. At real time, it didn't really look like that big of a deal. And then the replay, yeah, there was some contact, but it looked like it was more top of the key. But I was curious with your angle next to Pat at the bench what you saw.
Well, he goes driving in, right? Now, number one, I thought he went a little too soon, but I can understand because I know he saw the opening. So, okay, you see the opening, you got to take the opening. I got that. But what I saw was this. I said he went in, and if you notice with his left leg, he moves to the right, and then the contact happens. Well, to me, moving to the right meant that he was avoiding contact. And it was the right call. Then we looked at the replay. He dramatically moves to his right, all right, when he goes up. He is dramatically trying to avoid contact. And the Duquesne player is trying to lean in a little bit to get to the contact, and he hit him. Now, did Lamar have his left arm out a little bit? Yes, there's no doubt about that. But the left arm was out, I think, because he was just going up and his left arm was out. It had nothing to do with, like, I'm trying to dramatically push off and use my off arm. He wasn't trying to do that. Brian Dorsey made the right call. In fact, to be honest with you, Sean, it wasn't a difficult call. That's the part that I found bizarre, is that in no way, in any shape or form, did I think it was a difficult call. And you know me, if I think it's a if it's a tough call that could go either way, I'd say it on the air. It's a tough call and go either way. You know darn well I've said, nah, they didn't get that call right. And if I say they didn't get the call right and it didn't benefit Penn State, you're just trying to be honest with the audience. I mean, that's not how Dick and I do the games. If we think that the official Penn State caught a break on it, we'll tell you Penn State caught a break on it. Well, neither one of us thought. Dick thought at first maybe he pushed off, and then he looked at the replay and goes, whoa, he says, that wasn't even close. I respect any coach that wants to fight for his players. I always respect that, right? But there's also another part to it that is really important. What does every coach preach to each one of his players when they're in practice? Keep your poise. Keep your poise. Well, the players for Duquesne actually the ones that kept their poise. Their coach didn't. He's the one that lost his poise out there. He's the one that in the end cost his team the game. And the reason he cost his team the game is this. Being a coach is very difficult. It is very, very difficult. Because as much as the fan gets mad and they want you fired and so forth because you lost the game, it is far more personal for the coach that they lost the game because it's your life, it's your record. So when the game is over and the fan who wants your job and wants your job on a silver platter, that individual still gets up the next morning and goes over to the insurance job and starts working again. Meanwhile, you, the coach, wake up the next day and you have to go back in and still be the coach. And you've just had a loss assigned to you. So I understand the absolute emotion behind all of this. Yet there's another part. You do fight for your players, but you also have to know what the limit is on fighting for your players. There's 5.2 seconds left when this happens. So if you're a coach, you can make your point, that was the wrong call, and if you're told one thing, just kind of, you've got to nip it in the bud. Here's the reason why. I've got a tie game. He's got two free throws. I've got 5.2. So part of the job is at some point, you've got to reel yourself back in and be the coolest cat in the building. At some point, there's an emotion, and I get the emotion. This is personal. Okay? That's your record. This is personal. They're your players. It's personal. It's your team. It's personal. I've got that. Always have been able to get that. But also a quality that makes a great coach, is the ability to then sit there and be the coolest cat in the building and say, okay, tie game. Okay, we're playing chess here. What's my next move? I need more time back on the clock. Can you please check? Okay, I've got a timeout remaining. Okay, we can either get the ball to mid. Do I want to go to midcourt and call the timeout? If we get a rebound, do I want the timeout there? Or do I want them to quickly get the ball to midcourt and call timeout maybe with 2.5 left and draw up a play? Or do I want to call the timeout now and call up and draw up the play? I want to either tie or win the game. That's not easy to do in the emotion of it. He didn't do that. Now, when he was coaching in high school, he would have looked at LeBron and said, okay, here, yeah, no matter what, just take the rebound, go do something. and LeBron, whatever you would have won, and moved on. He only lost one game with LeBron in high school. Yes, he was LeBron's coach in high school. And he didn't do that. It's not easy, but guess what? It also is a prerequisite to being the head coach. One of the prerequisites to being a really good head coach is the ability to, in your mind, be playing chess. And to be thinking, I don't care if you're a football coach thinking, let's take Anthony Lynn. If we score here, I'm going to go for 2 points. I'm going to end the game now. I don't want Patrick Mahomes to have the ball again. This is the mistake I think Doug Peterson made in the Dallas game. When they scored that, I strongly felt they should have gone for 2 points because his defense had given up over 500 yards and Dallas was moving the ball at will. So am I going to roll the dice on a coin flip? Even in the end, I mean, there's a bad call that allowed Dallas to keep the ball. But you see what I'm saying. You've got to make those hard decisions, but you've got to, in your head, play the game of chess as you're going to make those kind of decisions. Keith Danbrot didn't do any of that last night. I'm not here to rip him in any way, shape, or form, but the bottom line is he ended up ripping himself because of what he did and how he handled it. And he was very, very stubborn in his post-game press conference about how it played out, and essentially is telling the world he was right. And I'm telling you right now, I watched it right in front of my own two eyes, and he was absolutely wrong as to how he handled the whole thing. I can understand fighting for your players. That part I get. He took it way too far and then way off the rails. You know, I always talk about, you know, you get to a certain point in your career where you feel like you've seen everything. I can tell you right now, I just added to that list last night. Penn State, we'll talk about first half, second half, what Penn State did last night. Then we'll get to a couple of other points, including recruiting coming up. So we'll talk first half, second half in just a few moments. We continue from Tuscaloosa on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Well, I can make the statement that now I feel like I've taken another step in the right direction of seeing it all after watching last night and the end. And Rajir Bolden stepped up, hit four free throws, and Lamar Stevens hit his two free throws, and Penn State won by six. So let's start first half, second half. First half, Penn State shot the ball brilliantly. When they got shots off, they were great. They shot 50% in the first half. They were 5-9 in threes, 56%. They're down 7 at halftime because they turned the ball over in droves in the first half. Turned it over in droves. And, you know, they acted like they had never seen a press before. And I think I said to Dick in the commercial break at one point that, and I didn't say it on the air, but I said in the commercial break, I said, boy, they need to get to halftime. I said, that way Pat can sit down on a whiteboard and say, look, this is how we're going to break the press. Right? And reiterate, because they went over it in practice. But sometimes you need halftime to say, look, this is how you're living. So now you got to get out of living that way. And, you know, because I was at practice. I was at shoot around. They worked on that, though, all the way through. And then they played as if they'd never seen it before. So they got crushed in the first half on turnovers. That was the reason Penn State was behind, purely on turnovers. And I felt, in some ways in the first half, that Duquesne got every loose ball because they out-hustled Penn State to get there. Okay. In the second half, that wasn't the case. Penn State was, by a wide margin, the dominant team in the second half of the game. In fact, as much as Duquesne dominated parts of the first half, Penn State was 10 times more dominant in the second half. Duquesne was 4 of 20 from the field in the second half. 4 of 20. All right? They shot 20%. So you're saying, well, why is it so close at the end? They were 20 of 21 at the free throw line in the second half. 20 of 21. That's why when Dan Brott gets up there and says in his post-game press conference, we had three calls go against us right in a row. You just shot two free throws with 10 seconds to go. You're telling me that call went against you? And by the way, the call with 10 seconds to go was the right call. But you're telling me that call went against you? Looks to me like your guy was shooting free throws. See, that's where I'm telling you. He's all out of... Okay? Lamar Stevens had 21 points in the second half. He had 25 of the game. He had 21 points in the second half. Okay? Josh Reeves, you're going to look at the line and go, oh, he had three points and, what, five rebounds, something like that? Look at the game a little closer. Second half, Josh had four steals. In the second half, not for the game he had four. All four were in the second half. He played brilliant defense. And then there was Mike Watkins, 1 of 6 from the field. but he had 12 rebounds. He had no block shots. We think he altered maybe 8 or 9 just from watching it. There was a play where Duquesne called timeout, and Keith Danbrot ran a specific play, and he was trying to get the ball underneath. Mike blew the whole play up along with Josh, and they ended up settling at the shot clock buzzer for a deep three that had no chance. Dredd came off the bench, had 12. Huge help. His shooting, especially in the first half, kept them within hailing distance. Then Penn State went on the streak, took the lead. But then to Duquesne's credit, they went on a 10-0 run. All right? And then Dredd hit another three to put them in front to stay. The free throw line's the only thing that kept Duquesne in the game. From it being instead of having 6 free throws to win, the way Penn State played defense, I mean, the free throw line is the only thing that kept them in, 20 and 21. I mean, it's this whole thing is a moot point if Duquesne doesn't execute as well as they did in the free throw line. They were 4-20 from the field in the second half. They were 0-7 in three-pointers. They ended up shooting only 36% for the game. Bolton had 8 turnovers last night, but he had 16 points. The 8 turnovers, most of them were in the first half. But again, it is Penn State cut way back in its turnovers in the second half. I want to say Penn State only had 4 turnovers in the second half, something like that. See, that was the difference. It changed up how they were going to do it. Every time the ball was to get the ball into Lamar, clear up the floor, and let Lamar work the ball up the floor. That's how they solved it. And not only that, what's the key to a press? The key to a press is, okay, is you try to always beat the press going forward, going forward, going forward. Okay, make them backpedal. Penn State in the first half had too many times where they went backward with the ball, which now really plays into the hands of a defense that's pressing. Second half, they didn't do that at all. I think Penn State had 4 turnovers total in the second half. And in the second half, they controlled everything. I mean, they outscored them by 13 in the second half and won the game. Hey, coming up tonight, we're going to have Shikellamy Wrestling against Shamokin tonight at 7, following our next-to-last Santa of the season. 6-7 tonight. Next-to-last Santa.
Can't believe it.
And I've been told that we will have the privilege of an outstanding lead into Penn State basketball tomorrow because Dave Ritchie will be on doing Shikellamy basketball,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
The Chief doing Shikellamy basketball as a lead-in. Is he doing the games alone these days? Or?
No, he's paired up.
Oh, who's he carrying?
Our guy.
who won again last night.
So
he won again last night. He picked OU.
No, I did.
Oh, you picked OU.
I was the lone wolf last night.
All right, brother. Yeah. Way to go.
Yep, I'm now even with the suit.
Really?
And the bowl picks, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So, out of nowhere, Le Suteroni slumps. He's in a slump.
Yeah, he and I are 6-2. King is 5-3. You are 4-4.
Maybe they got the wrong guy in charge of the show.
Gasparilla Bowl is tonight. Marshall and South Florida. You and I took South Florida. King in the suit took Marshall.
Yeah. That was one of those picks where I was like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I'll take South Florida. That looks good.
That's how you can treat the first 20.
Yeah, whatever.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Hey, big weekend coming up. Why don't you cap the holidays and buy yourself a brand new car? And believe me, Sunbury Motors has the inventory and the variety of beautiful brand new cars to choose from. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. you know, I talk about Keith Dambrot losing his poise last night. And this does go back to something. Let's go, you know, I always talk about teaching moments with my class. And I tell them that what you have to do is that, yes, you can be certainly emotional broadcasting any game. I mean, you know, to me, you can't do the game flat. There's got to be emotion when you do a game. I mean, it just has to be. You know, the people listening to you are emotional. I said, but at the same time, you also have to remember that in certain situations, I tell them this, you have to be the coolest cat in the building. Because you have to be the one that has, you know, whether it's a stadium or a building or a ballpark, you've got to be the one in the tough emotional moments that then starts to think about, okay, here's some free throws. Are they going to change the lineup? What might the other team do? Do they have a timeout remaining? What's the possession arrow? Football, how many timeouts do you have? What's the range of your kicker? You know, what's the win like? You know, you got to be thinking about all these things that you can then bring up with your analyst and also alert the audience as to what they should be thinking about as well. And most of the time you'll find the audience is thinking right along with you. So that also goes to being a coach, where you've got to be the one that's still the coolest cat in the building. So, because people say to me, oh, you know, you sound sometimes like, and everything is under complete control the entire time. Complete control. I know when I'm getting emotional and why, but at the same time, then Jack's talking, and I'm thinking about what, you know, I'm listening to him, what's he saying, to then keep going, but also thinking about what I need to do. I'm looking out, seeing what the personnel happens to be. You get so emotional. No, I get emotional because it's a big moment and a big play. The second the big moment and the big play is over, I'm looking to see what the new personnel is, and I'm listening to Jack. It's all controlled. Okay? It's genuine but controlled. There's a big difference. He totally lost control last night. Completely. Let's get to recruiting. Penn State did really well on the recruiting trail yesterday, and it's not over yet because there's a late signing period coming up. And in that late signing period, we'll see what Penn State wants to do with it. Part of this is going to be, for example, somebody may not want to take a fifth year. I don't know if anybody is in that category, but they may not. So you got to at least think of that part. We'll see what players want to do in terms of opting for the draft, which then opens up spots for what you're doing in the late signing period. Tom Van Herren happens to be recruiting analyst and the college football analyst for ESPN and ESPN.com. Tom, welcome. Thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, yesterday obviously was a great day for a lot of young people across the country, over this, at least settle where they think they're going to be for the next 3 to 5 years along the way. It's obvious that certain programs did well. I'm sitting right now in Tuscaloosa. We know Alabama did well. How well in the end did Penn State do with all this?
Well, I think given the circumstances, I think it was a really good class. You know, it wasn't last year where they finished with a top five class, but we had them at number 12 overall, and I think probably part of that ranking that it's not within the top five or the top 10 is they had 18 total commitments in the class, which is fewer than a lot of the teams ahead of them. But I think if you look at it, I think they've got a lot of really good prospects in this class, and I think what sticks out the most is probably the running backs that they landed. Noah Cain and Devin Ford, both ESPN 300 running backs, and they were able to land Noah Cain away from some big programs that he was going back and forth with until the end. And I think those two commitments for me kind of it shows the recruiting prowess that this program still has. Some of the other prospects they were able to land too, Brandon Smith and Adisa Isaac, one of the top defensive ends in this class. I think they've got some big names in here and some guys who might be able to contribute early. And I think some guys that will hear their name called quite a few times in the few years to come.
I'm getting the sense that first part you talked about, the fact that it's an 18-person class at the moment, and obviously with the late signing period that can change. It's the actual numbers. It's not like getting 23 guys or 24, which could have changed their ranking, correct?
Yeah, you have to factor all that into the rankings. You know, you look at, like I said, they've got 18. And some of the teams ahead of them, Alabama's got 26, Georgia has 22, A&M was 25. I mean, you know, it's tough to compare those. And I think Ohio State is probably in the same boat. They only have 16 commitments,
right?
Which is part of why they're at 11 overall. So all of that factors in the quality and the quantity of the class.
What about the Justin Fields issue now? He's leaving Georgia, free agent. In college football, go anywhere he wants. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about Ohio State. What do you know about that?
Yeah, he's in the database, which allows the NCAA database, which allows teams to contact him and basically recruit him again. And you know, I never like to use definitive words in college football because you just never know. So I like to say he's in that database and he's looking. It very good chance that he leaves, it looks like. But at the moment, Kirby Smart said he's still practicing. He's preparing for the bowl game. He's still with the team, which I think that in itself provides for a unique dynamic. But with Ohio State itself, you know, I think it's an interesting situation. If Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback at Ohio State, decides to leave, what we've been told is the reports are that if Justin Fields does transfer, he's going to try to look for a waiver to be eligible immediately because he's not a grad transfer. He wouldn't have that immediate eligibility. And I think that's something that's going to factor into the decision of where he goes and who takes him if he's eligible immediately. And Ohio State, for me, you know, if Dwayne Haskins does decide to go draft after this season, I think Justin Fields is an outstanding fit within that offense because he's an excellent passer and he can still move the ball with his feet. He's a better runner than Dwayne Haskins, and I think he's an outstanding passer. So I think he could succeed in Ryan Day's offense, and I think it would be a good marriage if that's where he ends up.
Does he have the same? They're allowed to have advisors. Does he have the same advisor as Shea Patterson? Is that correct?
Well, so the comment that the report that I've heard is no comment on that from the lawyer Tom Mars, who is. He's kind of become well known within college football now, and you're speaking to the Ole Miss transfers when Patterson, Van Jefferson, and a couple other Ole Miss players were transferring and looking for immediate eligibility, and Tom Mars was able to petition the NCAA and get that immediate eligibility. So it would make sense if they were working together. The last report that I heard, the last comment from him that I had heard was no comment. So, you know, it would make sense, given his reputation, given what he's done in the past, that they would be working together if Justin Fields decides to go that route.
How'd you feel about what Michigan did?
I think they did a really good job. I mean, we've got them. What I was looking at really was them, how they bounced back from last year. They last year finished with the top class ever in our, and it was a concerted effort on Michigan's part to focus in on production and recruiting and getting it back to that high level. We saw some assistant coaching shuffle. They brought in Al Washington, Sharon Martuy, who helped energize their recruiting throughout the year, and it paid off. It looked like they were going to lose safety Daxton Hill, a five-star. He flipped Alabama. And those coaches were relentless with it. They stuck on him. Even at to Alabama, they kept recruiting him, and they got it back yet on signing day. So they have him, and they've got a quick front, both on the defensive and offensive line. And then I think one of the bigger things for me, the last time that we saw Michigan, I think a lot of comments that we saw from that Michigan-Ohio State game was that it looked like Ohio State had a lot more speed on the field. And I think Michigan had been in this class. There's a couple prospects in particular, with Mike Sainristil and Giles Jackson, both speedsters on the offensive side, I think them in that category.
Who surprised you positively in recruiting, and who surprised you negatively in recruiting?
Arkansas positively. That's a definitive answer for me because what they were able to do after a 2-10 season, we've got them ranked number 19 in the class ranking. So to be able to land the top class after going 2-10 on the field with a newer staff, that is tremendous. And I think it's a lot of credit to Chad Morris, the new head coach, and his and how they recruit, the strategy that they have. And I was actually on another program earlier talking about Arkansas, and I said I used the word exciting. It's an exciting program now. And I said, when is the last time you heard anyone use the words exciting and Arkansas in the same sentence in the past 5 years? I don't recall anyone doing that. Now it is. And they've kind of revitalized recruiting, and I think prospects think about them. And then on the negative side, I look at UCLA. We ranked the teams out to the top 50, and UCLA is not even in the top 50 of the class rankings, which I think is incredible. And you combine that with the fact that Oregon is having a ton of success in California. Oregon's got six of the top ESPN 300 prospects from the state of California. UCLA has zero. And that was a big shock to me. I was surprised to see that. And just the way that they're recruiting and the way that they're closing, especially with this early signing period, now that most of the prospects are signed, I don't know. I just feel like Chip Kelly and his staff, they're in the eight ball here, and I don't know how much room is left for them to improve.
Tom, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it very much.
No problem. Have a good one.
Tom Van Haren from ESPN.com, one of their recruiting analysts and also one of their college football analysts. Eli Gold next half hour. The play-by-play voice of Alabama football, John McClain, the legendary writer from the Houston Chronicle on the Texans and Eagles in the final half hour. Tomorrow, Jason Kendall, former Major League Baseball catcher for many years with the Pirates. He'll be speaking at the First Pitch Dinner, which will take place February 1st at Penn State. We'll talk with him tomorrow. The King on the show tomorrow. Right now, the King and I occupy last place in the bowl picks, but still very early on. The suit is on a two-game losing streak and in the hallway pacing as we speak. No? Yeah?
Or they sounds just about come right,
out with
the, yeah.
Or they just come out with a sales report.
Both.
Okay.
End of year numbers.
He must be scared to death. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
It's holiday time, and there's only one place you need to go. Brewers Outlet, the Beverage Supermarket Sunbury. Brewers Outlet has all of your holiday party needs. Soda, snacks, lottery tickets, the pickle bar, and of course, beer. The area's largest selection of imports, specialties, microbrews, and many of your favorite domestics. This week's specials, Bud and Bud Light 18-pack cans, just $10.88. That's $3.63 a six-pack. And Labatt 28-pack bottles, $18.95. And the ultimate holiday present, a Brewers Outlet gift card. Merry Christmas from Brewers Outlet Sunbury.
The 2018 season isn't over yet.
McSorley back, sets, throws in the end zone, got him, touchdown, Penn State, DeAndre Tompkins, and the Nittany Lions respond.
It's the Citrus Bowl, Penn State versus Kentucky. Tune in New Year's Day on the Penn State Sports Network.
Steve Jones, join Jack Hamm and me for the Citrus Bowl, airtime 11:30 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
WKOK, we are Penn State.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. We're in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And since we're in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, we're naturally going to talk with Eli Gold, the play-by-play voice of Alabama football. We'll talk to Eli in the next half hour. John McClain, Houston Chronicle on Texas and Eagles in the final half hour. Get a feel from John as to the kind of job Bill O'Brien has done this season, especially with Deshaun Watson. Interesting talk with Bill about Deshaun Watson back in April. About Deshaun Watson. We'll get into that with Bill and John. And John with John McClain, I mean. John learned today he's one of four of Baylor's 2019 Distinguished Alumni Award winners. So that's great. Well, let's see here. Girardi sent me pictures. This can't be good. I'll be surprised if there's a horse in here.
I was going to say, yeah. Looking ahead to next spring already? I got a feel for maybe a Derby winner here coming up next year.
No. They went to Dreamland without me today.
No. No, yeah. That was tonight. They couldn't wait.
Well, okay. Well, here's the deal. This is what we're going to do, I think. This is the way he explained it to me.
Well, they got to bring takeout to you.
Well, this is what they explained to me today. Is that they're going to Dreamland for lunch. There's a picture of Tarman. Okay. Then there's a picture of a gigantic slab of ribs. And what's this picture of? It looks like dipping sauce for the ribs. Oh, and also sausage. And their national championship victory, Alabama over Notre Dame. The headline in the paper, four-leaf clobber. You're a Notre Dame fan out there. I know you don't think that's funny at all. All right, so they went to Dreamland for lunch today without me because I'm doing the show. So I don't have, you know, they have time, I don't. And we're going to go, the Bear, Chris Felica. Dick was talking with him this morning, and he said, hey, down in Tuscaloosa, you know, where besides Dreamland? And he gave him two other suggestions. We're going to one of them tonight, a steakhouse. Okay, so we're going to go to that, because they want to go to lunch today. They want to go back to Dreamland tomorrow. They just haven't decided whether it's after the show or not, because, I mean, our game's not until 9 o'clock at night. So it's not like we don't have time.
Plenty of time.
Yeah. But, yeah, they went to Dreamland without me today. And guess whose suggestion it was to go to Dreamland?
Let's see. Yeah, I'm talking to him.
It was my idea.
As quite a fixture in Tuscaloosa as Bear Bryant. I believe they debuted the very same year down there.
I remember they did. You know, it's another like that, Bear Bryant. And Bear Bryant was right. You know, they didn't pin that. I love Joe Paterno, Ben Stein.
What?
What did he say?
Is that your Bill Belichick imitation?
No, that's hey, I'll never forget. I interviewed Bear Bryant at the hotel in Burnham in 1981 on a Friday before Penn State was going to play them. So I went down there and interviewed him. And I brought it back to the station I was working for at the time, and I'm using it in the sportscast. And the general manager comes and goes, what the heck is that? I said, that's Bear Bryant. He says, I can't understand a word he's saying. Why are you playing it? I says, it's Bear Bryant. He says, all they're going to care about is that we're the only station that got him. He says, well, that's a good point. Oh, now I got a picture of the outside of the place. Great. You sent me a picture of Tarman standing in front of the Dreamland sign. I'm texting back, memorable.
Perfect for your Christmas cards next year.
That's great. Yeah, the next time I come down to Tuscaloosa, I'm going over.
By myself. You guys stay at the hotel.
I might as well just go myself tomorrow. What the heck? Whose idea was it to go over there?
Yeah. Yours.
Yeah. Who ended up with nothing?
Life's unfair sometimes. Ask Duquesne's head coach from last night.
Okay, he created his own luck.
He did.
Okay? I mean, it sounds like I'm not
saying,
done.
Well, it's like we're saying during the break. I mean, not one, not two. I saw at least, what, three Duquesne players trying to hold him back?
Yeah, they had more poise than he did. It's unbelievable. I guess Scott Van Pelt played it last night. Now, here's the irony of it. Now, as we know, in Grantville, they now have Sportsbook, and the Rivers Casino in Pittsburgh opened its Sportsbook yesterday. Okay? So that's two in the state. You know what the line in the game was yesterday?
I think it was, what, five and a half? Yeah, five and a half. Wow.
What is six free throws equal?
For some, a bad beat.
Yeah, you got that right. Ooh. And Van Pelt last night played it over. He goes, so let's just see here. The line is what? Well, there's one. There's two. There's three, four, five, six. I didn't see it because obviously we were on a plane last night. I mean, we were on a plane last night, so I didn't see it. But I was told about it this morning that he did that. It may have been the bear that told Dick that this morning because they were on a conference call this morning. Well, see, we're in touch with all sorts of people here. Right? I mean, this is not a one-trick pony deal over here.
No, no. You know, you got the heavy hitters over there at Dreamland having a power lunch, solving the world problems, and the money issues on Wall Street.
No, they didn't do a very good job with that today. The Dow lost 534 points today. You know what's really bad about that? As I went through and looked at the big losers of the day, guess who owned the stock in most of them?
Uh-oh.
Now you know why he's pacing back and forth. That has nothing to do with the fact you tied him in bowl picks. Eli Gold, the play-by-play voice of Alabama football, joins us next from Tuscaloosa, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.